Good evening, everyone. Welcome. Tonight is a public evening, so I would like to extend a special welcome to those of you who are our guests this evening here for the first time. What I thought I would talk about this evening is I thought I would address a time-honored question. Why do sadhana? First, let's discuss what sadhana is. Sadhana is spiritual life. It is a way of approaching life. It is a way of attending to the full force and expression of existence. It first comes forward in the various disciplines of attention, the ideas of meditation and concentration, discrimination. These are forms of attention, forms of awareness. Learning to address the given formula of existence in all its relativity. Meditation is the ability to address the entire sweep and scope of existence in an unbroken field of awareness, an unbroken field of consciousness, all-inclusive. Concentration is its opposite, the ability to exclude all qualities except for a single quality and to address with the full force of one's attention that single matter. The idea of discrimination, the idea of increasing the subtlety of one's intelligence, being able to discern increasingly subtle levels of phenomena, increasingly subtle levels of reality. These are the basic tools of spiritual life. When we address the question, why do sadhana? The answer comes back, it is the only approach to life that has a genuine chance, a genuine opportunity to completely change, to completely improve one's condition. The idea of cause and effect, what in spiritual thought is called karma, what we think of here in the West as nature, and the chain of evolution that consciousness moves up the ladder from a lower form of awareness, lower form of consciousness, to a higher form of consciousness. In other words, that the frame of being, the dynamics of body, mind, attention, intellect, complexity of experience moves from the simpler to the more grand in scope. That people begin the process of evolution all up and down the chain. Some begin in the animal kingdom. Some begin in the human form. But we can clearly see when we engage just the race of humanity that not all humans are made alike. That there are different levels of capability, different levels of experience, of knowledge. It seems to come from somewhere. That the fundamental presentation of life is a kind of stress, some would call suffering, brought about by a balance and imbalance between knowledge and ignorance. That the forces that we meet in life more often than not come from a place we don't understand. That the dynamics of our life are put together by the energies that we can call, for lack of a better word, desire. And that the fundamental tenets of life involve the fulfillment of those desires. In a simple arrangement, in a simple world, the fulfillment of one's desires equals happiness, and the failure to fulfill one's desires equals suffering. But we all know that life is not that simple. That the issues that we are presented in existence run far deeper than that. In spiritual thought, the idea of evolution, in other words, the movement from a simple form of life to a more complex form of life, is also held and that the acquisition of a human form is the ascertainment and apprehension of one of the highest spiritual prizes. In spiritual thought, which is based on the broad sweep of existence from high to low, depth and breadth, that the human form is a final form. In other words, it need not go further in the evolutionary chain. The what is given in the dynamics of the human formation carries all the hardware and software that one needs to realize the destiny of existence. Furthermore, that the human form, when compared to all the other forms of life, even in the visible world, is rare. When you think of the number of animals, the numbers of flora and fauna, creatures of the sea, our numbers are minute. In fact, a human can be said to be as rare as a star at midday. Just at the odds. Having gained this rare and wondrous instrument that has a capacity for the sweep, depth, and breadth of experience, both external and internal. The evolutionary throb that drives all life takes a turn in nature, and that turn is one of involution, a turning inward of one's attention. As we move from the simpler to more complex formations, the consciousness is almost always externalized. You rarely see a deeply internalized consciousness with a physical body. That it takes an act of consciousness of will, a consciousness born of knowledge, that attention having been externalized through the movement of evolution senses a vacuum of knowledge at the core. Countless desires sought and fulfilled, countless desires sought and lost, countless desires fulfilled and once again lost and then fulfilled again. The subtler intelligence begins to detect a pattern that we are looking too much on the surface. We are looking at the reflection on the surface of the ocean and know nothing of its depths. This throb of the turning of evolution to involution, that turn is sadhana. That turn is the essence of spiritual life. Why do sadhana? Well, in spiritual thought, the human form is not just a formation of a single body driven by the organization of a psychic apparatus and the organization of its senses. In spiritual thought, the human form is said to have four bodies, organized along systematically subtle and increasingly subtle principles of organization. In other words, the first body being the physical body, and the organizing principle is matter. The second body is called the subtle body. The organizing principle is energy. It is in this body that a force called the prana shakti, or what we call in the West the life force, is present and animates the physical body, running all of the dynamics of the metabolism, and is the source of energy of the organization of the senses. It is also the place where the psychic apparatus of the organizing principle of the psychic apparatus interfaces. The third body being the causal body, the organizing principle here is mental awareness or mind. From the standpoint of the in the arrangement of the causal body, the subtle body, and the physical body, we have the psychic apparatus that deals with the dynamics of identity, the architecture of which is ego, which is the eye-making reflex, the intellect, which is the list-making reflex that serves the ego. I is ego, am a man, is intellect. I am a woman. I am tall, I am short. And the dynamic of what is called the manas, or the mind essence, that takes the data between the eye-making reflex and the list-making reflex of intellect and forms concepts, forms pictures, arranges the data of memory that is organized by the senses. And out of these three faculties of psychic apparatus, the dynamics of experience arise. The fourth body is different and separate than the other three bodies. The fourth body is called the supracausal body. The prefix supra means beyond, and causal means consciousness. So the supracausal body means beyond consciousness. In Sanskrit, the body is called Atman, the self. This body is present and hardwired into each individual. And at the same time, it arises as the ocean of infinite consciousness. It is paradoxical, and thus it is said to be beyond the mind. It is a level of organization beyond consciousness. Why do sadhana? The essence of spiritual life is the organization of the physical, externalized consciousness of the physical body, the energy body of the subtle body, the mental body of the causal body, and the ocean of consciousness, the Atman, the supercausal body. In a person that has not begun spiritual life, each of these bodies are operating, yet they're operating subconsciously. The essence of spiritual life is the alignment and the illumination of all four bodies by the infinite light of consciousness that originates in the fourth body, the deepest body, the self, the Atman. The first aspect of this journey is, as I said, one of attention. Like any subject, easy or hard, one can only hope to come to any experience of it, any knowledge of it, an event or any mastery of it, by first paying attention to it. This idea of attention is the idea of sadhana. One, if we were to take this premise one step deeper and more subtle, one could say that there is in the unawakened person a kind of conflict of identity. One whose organizing principle of I consciousness is arrayed with the dynamics of the senses, the organs of action, the physical body, and the experiences of the physical body, yet having no underlying experience of the bodies of energy or the bodies of mind, let alone the innermost body of the infinite self. This infinite self being the ocean of all consciousness, of all qualities, of all being. in the same way that all life emerged from the ocean on this planet. All reality emerged from this ocean of consciousness. In the inattentive person, the unawakened person, this truth is only occupying the subconscious, the unconscious aspects of mind. Those beings that have begun the process of sadhana have taken the force of their life, the throb of their existence, and begun to turn that attention inward and illuminate the inner pathway, the distance between this locality of this surface identity, which is much like the glacier floating in the vast ocean, only the fraction of its true mass is visible. Its underlying truth lay beneath the water. So it is with a human being. What is seen on the surface is the least part of our nature. But the question of why do sadhana is answered by the individual, the nature of the individual finally becoming curious. That curiosity growing and growing until it becomes a burning desire, a yearning desire to know one's true self. Having observed that the experiences of life, the experiences of existence, of oneself, of one's loved ones, of your fellow human beings, of the history of the race as a whole, all of that energy, suffering, all that transitory history never adds up to the whole of the matter. It never adds up. That there is a missing factor in the equation, and that finally, after having put it off as long as possible, one makes up their mind to find out for themselves. Fulfillment of desires, don't do it. Victory, defeat. 1,000 loves, 1,000 lost loves. The transitory quality of life, the certainty of death. That the dynamics of existence at the level of the physical material body and senses, at the underlying body of energy, the even further subtle body of the causal mental sheath, and the incredible inner workings of those essences, the dynamics of mind and body, the unfolding of karma, the dynamics of cause and effect that are suspended, each in their own way, in the physical body, the body of energy, the body of mind, that generate a process of the resolution of cause and effect. What in spiritual thought is called the wheel of samsara, a form of spiritual law that raises one up and draws one down, raises one up and draws one down. That existence is a circle. All qualities on this wheel are transitory. That the three bodies of body, of matter, energy, and mental awareness are bound to this wheel. And it's only the energy of the fourth body, the energy of infinite consciousness, Atman, the self, that both pervades the wheel and transcends the chain of cyclical existence. Part of the complexity for human beings is that when you think of each of these qualities, gross physical matter, energy, formlessness of mental attention, well, they all move at different speeds, don't they? Matter being the slowest moving, energy being more swift, mind being swifter still. Swiftest of all is consciousness. This polarity of, on the one hand, we have the supreme identity of Atman, what we call the supreme I consciousness, the source of all being, and the transitory identity of the individual self, the ego. Just consider that polarity. And between those two poles, we have all of the dynamics of cause and effect of mind, body, purification, intellect, bliss, and the infinite totality, the desire to do sadhana, is that to push back that unconscious wall or that wall of unconsciousness and be vividly present at every point between these two poles that are the alpha and omega of individual nature. You see, attention has a quality of momentum. If you are familiar with the laws of physics, one of their principles is that an entity in motion tends to stay in motion, an entity at rest tends to stay at rest. Our consciousness has the momentum of being externalized. It is bound to the wheel of cause and effect. You can't underestimate this power of karma. Actions that have been generated in the past play out in time at different speeds of time, at different levels of attention, in different states. We are all familiar that the human beings live out all of their existence in one of three states. The waking state, where the senses and the organs of action, the mind, are externalized, and we share an external view of the world. The dream state, where the body seems to be offline and the mind is internalized, the senses are offline. And the mind itself interacts with the mass of data that we call memory and produces a reality that we share only with ourselves. In the dream state, if you were asleep in your room and we all snuck into your room very quietly, we would see you, your body asleep on the bed, but we would have no idea what dream you were having. At the same time, you would not know we were in your room. We might soak into your dream in some weird way. And the deep sleep state, the state where the mind thinks of nothing at all. The human being lives out every minute, every second of their existence in one of these three states. If we believe in karma, if we believe in reincarnation, countless lifetimes are lived out in one of these three states. Spiritual life, in that regard, is the addition of a fourth state, the state where we become consciousness itself, where our awareness merges with the source of the supreme identity, the infinite self, the Atman. And that dynamic of an awareness of infinite consciousness pervades the waking state, pervades the sleep with dream state, pervades the dreamless sleep state, changing them. It's then that we find out that the identity of the ego is a kind of pretender to the throne of reality, that it has existed in a kind of dream. And in that dream, it is the ruler of all it perceives, but it has no contact with the underlying reality from which it is drawing all of this energy from, let alone the energy of the second body, the energy of the third body, but let alone the energy of the fourth body, the infinite consciousness. that somewhere along the line, the momentum of the externalization of attention is given a blow, a glancing blow, and our attention internalizes, and in an instant, our attention floods all three bodies and makes a connection with the fourth body. And in that moment, we feel connected to infinite creation. It happens to everyone. That moment is called Shaktipat. That in a single moment, the entire momentum of the wheel of cause and effect is interrupted, and the attention that has been drawn by the momentum of cause and effect through countless lifetimes and externalized through countless lifetimes is gains salvation from the wheel, and one's consciousness strikes to the inner core of being and experiences the immortality of its own soul, of its own nature. Oftentimes, that moment is only a second. It can be under any situation, in a dream, just walking down the street. Sometimes people have their first satori, their first union with the self on drugs. This moment of Shaktipat is a moment of grace. It's a deliverance from the forces of cause and effect and the forces of Maya, or the veiling energies of ignorance. And for that instant, one's attention is directly aligned and perfectly in relationship with the Creator, energy of the Creator and the energy of the creation. You feel in perfect equilibrium. It's a moment of no thought and absolute peace, stillness, and perfection. This moment is often the beginning of spiritual life. You have caught a glimpse of the underlying reality of the illusion of existence, and caught a glimpse of that, of its own inner immortality. After this occurs, one, for the first time, has the first answer to the question, why do sadhana? Having experienced the truth, the inner truth, even for a moment, you know without the slightest doubt that you want more of that, that you want to look deeper into those issues. One of the things that's interesting about the unfolding in truth is that it happens at any time, at any place. It is not perquisite to any particular form of existence. In other words, one need not lead an externally spiritual life. One can live a spiritual life. One can do sadhana in any frame of life. In other words, the only dynamic is that the logic of your existence be true to the heart of your own destiny. That if form is destiny, one can only come to the resolution that a human being is destined to realize its true self-nature, its true identity. All of the apparatus of the physical body, the psychic apparatus, the senses, the dynamics and complexity of the energy body, the stream of attention that flows from the crown of the head to the base of the spine, called Sushumna, that stores all of the data of everything you have ever been, everything you ever will be. Coiled at the base of the Sushumna is an energy called Kundalini. That is the exact same quality of energy that created the apparent universe, the creation. The quality of the third body is a body of infinite capacity. There's the dynamic of the sentient mind, the mind that is of the psychic apparatus, that has the eye-making reflex, but there is also a mind behind that mind that is called unmanas, or no mind. It's a title in Zen, where the mind collapses and infinite consciousness becomes vividly present. And the fourth body, the Atman, the supreme identity, paradoxical in that it is at one time the ocean of consciousness, the source of all creation, and yet it is hardwired into the framework of the individual formation of the individual consciousness of a human being. It can only be a divine gift. That, in concert with the flexibility of our awareness, the flexibility of our attention, that we have within our nature the capacity to move from the scope of and psychological framework of the individual identity and move inside the internal mechanics of being to a configuration within self wherein one's identity is universal. That both the hardware and software for that maneuver are hardwired into the framework of the human being. One can only conclude, as form is destiny, that a human being is born to realize the self. That this moment of revelation is a form of mercy where one's evolutionary cycle and externalization of attention turns and the process of involution begins. Once that begins, it is only a matter of time, a very short amount of time, before the realization of their true identity is realized, is recognized, is experienced beyond religious thought or philosophical thought, but direct experience. Thus we see the spiritual path is not something outside of ourselves, but inside of ourselves. That the unfolding of consciousness, the unfolding of awareness, is the spiritual path, and that path is called sadhana. Sadhana being a process by which a human being comes to know their true nature, realize their true nature, recognize it, and experience it. That the dynamics of a life aligned with sadhana fulfills itself, and the process of spiritual life is so dynamic, so intense, as the inner workings of existence, quite literally, the inner secrets of existence, are revealed to you, treasure after treasure. The dynamic of spiritual life does carry the nature of wonder. It is also extremely direct and fiercely intense, and more so the closer you come to the inner source. This dynamic of Shaktipat is one of alignment. It, somewhere along the line, the energies of cause and effect come into equilibrium, positive and negative effects of actions. And then a force known as Guru, which is an equilibrium of darkness and light, comes along and strikes you. And in that strike, your life is knocked into alignment with its own spiritual destiny. Now, when you consider the vastness of the infinite force of existence, the source of creation arising from the ocean of consciousness, and all of the four forms of creation that have emerged from that ocean, deep and profound stream, it's absurd to think that one form of life over another is particularly unique or different. The secret, the truth, is to find the true inner alignment and unfold those internal knots, those internal messages of your own being. It's a kind of life where you learn to run deep. But unless a person had the eye for a spiritual life, maybe they wouldn't know what was going on with you at all. But you can feel those energies truing up inside you, just like you can take a true line on dead reckoning off the North Star. You can just feel the line. The energies of prana, which are the dynamics that carry the elements of the life force and the weights and balances of the negative and positive actions of karma, your cause and effect, begin to unfold in a process of purification. The mind and body essentially begin to empty out, because it turns out that they act as a kind of veil between your consciousness, your awareness, and the innermost vibration of the self. It's always there, it's always vibrating profoundly. But the dynamics of cause and effect produce a veiling energy in the same way that the morning fog veils the rays of the sun. That the dynamics of spiritual life increase the force of the rays of the sun, thus self, illuminating the karma that is stored in the physical body, the energy body, the mental body, burning them off, just like the rays of the sun burns off the morning fog. And in that same way, that mounting, inner mounting flame, the inner mounting light, arising from its own source, reveals itself. It reveals itself. And in that revelation, one's true nature is realized. In that revelation, one's true nature is recognized, and your destiny as a human being is fulfilled.